Welcome to the Sunday Times Politics Weekly, where we unpack the week's big political stories. I'm Mike Siluma. This week, together with my guests, we focus on the culture of violence, which has entrenched itself seemingly in our politics, about which not much is being done. In the last week or so, we've seen its impact in places as far apart as Lichtenberg in the northwest and Inanda in KZN. We'll also be looking at the impact of the COVID pandemic on the forthcoming municipal elections. And joining me this week are veteran violence monitor Neri de Haas and Sunday Times political correspondents Zimasa Matiwane as well as Amanda Koza.
Man, this aircon is racist.
I've never ever been a spy.
Can the VBS bank loot?
The problem is that pinky.
I'll never subject myself to whiteness.
I'm listening.
Can you have consistency, Honorable Chair?
Corruption was an Olympic sport. They will always win gold.
This is not a ship.
Sergeant at arms, can you please come in?
Welcome to all of you. Let's start with you, Zimasa, from where you are sitting. Would you like to just give us a backdrop of what has been happening on the political front in the run-up to the elections, particularly the violence that has accompanied the nomination lists?
Good afternoon, Bramike. So initially, it was protesting that was prevalent, whereby ANC members in the main were, you know, going to the provincial office and complaining that their disputes in terms of the list processes are not being attended to, that, you know, the provincial office had preferences at branches and, you know, those people were being elevated to the top of the list. However, this week there was a shooting whereby three people died, Kwamashu, Ward 54. And to point it to the direction of sort of like making it clear that it is likely politically connected, the three killings, the branch was doing a rerun of its BGM. So the first one was done. There were complaints and this was a second one. And obviously when that happens, you know, you most likely have two factions in a branch and, you know, they are both advancing different slates and nobody wants to lose. And, you know, democracy doesn't count anymore. So, you know, if you're not going to respect democratic processes within the ANC, then you might as well eliminate competition. So I strongly believe that that is what happened.
Mary, we all, I suppose, can understand a difference in political point of view, a difference in ideology, a difference in emphasis or nuance in a political party. But what I wanted to ask you, off the back of what Zimasa has said, you know, to say, it seems as if violence in our politics has become endemic.
You mean the fact that inevitably, whenever there are elections, there's a political, not just political contestation, but violent political contestation, yes. Particularly in this province. Is that what you mean, that it seems to go hand in hand with these political processes?
Yes. What are the factors that are giving rise to this historically, would you say? Maybe if we started there.
Right. Well, I mean, I think it's well known that this province has a long history of leading the country.
This is KZN.
This is KZN, yeah. It has its own history of leading the violence levels, political violence levels. In fact, we even exported them to Gauteng in the early 90s, all from this province. And the reason for that was that It was the most heavily contested province in the country because it was the only province in which there was a sizable opposition, or supposedly sizable, because the Inkatha opposition was never as big as it was said to be, but the apartheid security forces were basically using it to weaken the power of the ANC from getting too much. I mean, basically, it wasn't about IFP ANC. It was about the apartheid state making war on the liberation forces. So that violence carried on right after the elections in 94, and there became a culture of it. Don't forget that during this time, quite apart from 14,000-18,000 people who died, there were so many people that lost their homes, that were injured for life, and kids grew up with this. So we've got communities that are grew up, became desensitized, stunted by the violence. But we also had post 94, I think this is quite an important point, we had the worst policing in the country. We had the dominance here of the old Bantustan KwaZulu policing, and the KwaZulu police were mainly promoted beyond their levels of competence. They were mainly badly trained as political foot soldiers or defending the Zulu kingdom. And after 94, ordinary good black SAPS members did not get fast-tracked, but the KZP did, and so did, unfortunately, a whole lot of white security policemen. So we never really had any proper transformation of the police here. And then after 2010, the policing just lurched from bad to worse because it became even more political. During all these years, first of all, it was Inkatha policing, and then it became ANC policing once the ANC won the province. Clearly was the MEC for policing in 2004 elections until he became the national commissioner. And we saw a very heavy emphasis moving from Inkatha policing to ANC policing, but also areas in which there was political party support from the police for the IFP, NFP, some for the ANC. So we've always had political policing, and it got worse after 2010, and the policing generally got worse after 2010, with all sorts of people integrated who weren't police, politicians, brigadiers, generals. So we're sitting with really bad policing, but this is the end result of why I'm giving you this historical overview, that in the meantime, the violence around elections carried on. It was normally until the early 2000s, ANC-IFP. Then it died off around elections. There were still sporadic incidents of people being killed, not nearly as much, but gradually it became an intra-ANC thing, but that especially after 2008. Because, as you know, the removal of President Mbeki just drove a wedge right down the middle of the ANC then. And it has a lot of them left for COPE and then came back to the ANC. That's what happened in Gleeblands as a background. So you had this politicized policing, and you had deteriorating policing after 2010. And look, for the first couple of years recently, I've seen an improvement, more accountability. But in this province, we are sitting with police who are right down, split down the middle. A lot of them are Zuma supporters, or they listen to Thele and not the commissioner because of this politicization. So I'm getting to why I'm telling you this. This was a factor in July during the violence and looting, you know, with police who are Zuma supporters sitting back and saying to threatening and intimidating colleagues. So we are now sitting, I mean, in Pietermaritzburg, we have an incident, and this is the best illustration of how these police take the part of politicians. They often take the part of councillors. We saw that in Gleeblands. They arrest the opponents of the councillors and bring spurious charges against them, which are later thrown out of court. It happened on Saturday. This is now last Saturday, at a meeting in Copesville in Pietermaritzburg. The sitting councillor is on trial for fraud. He is called Madlala. And the ANC nationally wants to remove him because it has the rule now that if you're facing criminal charges, you may not stand. He's resisting that. So on Saturday, at a meeting, one of these constituency meetings, it was open in the ward to, you know, to others, there is an alternative candidate called, his name is Zondi. I'm trying to remember his first name off the top of my head. He was stabbed during this meeting and the police were present and they did nothing. Now, this is a notorious police station called Mountain Rise, which has also been part of the persecution of Thabiso Zulu. In fact, Thabiso had gone off with friends to drop some fruit and water for the old people at the meeting. As they were leaving, they were assaulted. But the point is, at the meeting, the popular candidate, Zondi, was actually stabbed and very seriously injured. To make matters worse, he is a key witness against Madlala in the criminal case, and he's a witness in the case in which Thabiso Zulu was almost killed. But the police were sitting there and did nothing.
I'm going to want to bring in Zemasa and Amanda at this point, because you've given us the background as to, you know, how we end up with this kind of environment where the violence seems to be intractable. But in the ANC itself, Zemasa, just to start with you, are you sensing that there is a political contestation in there, or is it a contestation about other things, individual issues, private issues, personal issues, or is there a political essence to the conflict?
Pramek, usually in the ANC, you would have a political contestation when you're going to a policy conference of the ANC, when you are going to, you know, a provincial or even regional conference. But when you are doing BGMs and you are picking ward councillors and, you know, you're picking the branch leadership, there isn't much political contestation. It's usually about the survival of the branch, the strength of, you know, the people that you choose for those particular positions. So it's not a democratic political issue. It's competition between ANC members for political positions and power, which translates to money.
It is not so much driven by the politics, but by other benefits. Presumably, everybody in government is aware of what is going on. You know, Mary earlier mentioned the role of the current Minister of Police, Ebeki Cele. So presumably we can safely assume that government, as government, is aware of the problem of political violence. Do you get a sense that it is a priority, Amanda, in government?
I would say that they are definitely aware. Sometimes you find that they are conflicted, and that's why sometimes it's actually hard to do anything about it. I mean, this goes back to even when, like Mary said, that when Peggy was still there. So it becomes very tricky when they have interest as well in the provinces. I don't think that they are prioritizing it. There was a commission that was done in KZN not too long ago on the political killings. What happened with that? Who was prosecuted? Where are the people that were held accountable for that? I don't think it's a priority for the government.
Mm. Mary, the other broader issue, though, is in terms of the broader South African society, would you say that our politics is violent like this because of the broader violent nature of South African society, or do you think that perhaps not?
No, look, the fact that we're a violent society is definitely part of it. People, we are historically violent. I mean, I've traced that out years ago, you know, about how this became a feature of our life during colonialism and apartheid because of the circumstances. Children growing up in broken families and not having role models, that's a major thing, major, major thing, the lack of adequate role models for children. They have a father who beats their mother or a boyfriend who beats their mother, and they don't have the role models they need if the father's around, for example. So that's an historic thing. We need to address this long term. But the immediate thing is it's also an historic thing because people get away with it. Quite frankly, violent crime in South Africa pays, and it will keep on paying until people are held to account. I mean, Amanda mentioned the Moroni Commission. Well, the Moroni Commission didn't say anything we didn't already know, those of us who've been steeped in this for so many years. And the fact is that, I mean, I was just answering some questions earlier. If you compare what's happening now to 2016, thus far, there haven't thankfully been as many people killed. There's a lot of kind of threats at meetings, assaults at meetings, etc. Another killing at Gleeblands on Sunday, etc. But it's still weeks to go, of course. But I have a list of people killed before the 2016 elections. There's over 20 of them. I do not know of a single conviction for those killings. And I mean, I do not know who this presidential task team reports to. I get these figures, clearly comes out at a press conference and says they have a 70 or 80% success rate, but nobody can give me any details of who exactly has been successfully prosecuted to my knowledge. And this isn't a pre-2016 killing. It's the very well-known one of Sindisa Magagula, because don't forget, when we talk politics, we're talking vested interests, we're talking corruption. And all over the country, politicians are getting killed because they are trying to expose corruption, or they're part of a corrupt web and they have to get killed before they talk. So that's a countrywide problem. And whistleblowers, of course, are getting killed. Now, in the Sindisa Magagula case, there is a case in court, and it's been in court for ages. That's the only case of the prominent people killed in the last few years that I actually know is even in court. I think there are a few others that are in court and, you know, maybe postponed. But, I mean, this is now 5 years later. And of these people killed before 2016, I am not aware of a single conviction. Now, that is why it carries on. And also, I mean, in the last elections, before 2016, there were instances of people going into meetings with armed guards, threatening people, roughing them up. Haven't even seen convictions for that. You know, the ANC says, no, we abhor this violence. We must do something. Then they must take those people. They must charge them. They must insist that the police charge them for pointing guns at people or assaulting people.
Okay. As Zamasa, just to take us back to KZN, where the violence happened, what is the atmosphere now? What is the mood like? How have the residents, the potential voters, responded to this, to the violence?
You know, I think when it comes to violence in KZN, we are so desensitized to a point where if three people die at an ANC branch meeting, it's not something that would turn a traditional ANC voter to reconsider voting for another party. So in the run-up to these elections, we haven't seen a lot of deaths. Yes, there's been violence, intimidation, like Mary said, but in contrast to what we saw in 2016, whereby, I mean, people were being shot in their houses, people were being attacked everywhere throughout the province. So, I mean, a couple of weeks ago, the provincial leadership had a press briefing and they were actually patting themselves on the back for the fact that there has not been a lot of violence this time around, meaning that, you know, they have made progress. So to answer your question, I think people will just, you know, read the story and move on with their lives. It's not going to be a factor in the elections.
Mm. Mm. Okay. And the campaigning has not even yet begun in earnest. So, yeah, let's keep an eye on the story and then maybe we come back to it. And now for the other big story of the week. And we start with you, Amanda Khoza. Would you say, given the court cases, the threats of court cases that are happening now, would you say this is the most controversial election yet?
It's most definitely. I would say it is definitely. Because by now, the election mood is really high, but like it's only started reaching a different level just this week. We started seeing political parties going out, putting out posters, basically everybody was in limbo until such time that on Sunday that the president announced that he's moving the country from adjusted level 3 to level 2. I think there was a little bit of movement for, there was permission or there was the green light basically for people to start moving, because all along political parties couldn't gather, you couldn't campaign. And we're so used to political parties knocking at people's doors, you know, giving out T-shirts, the ANC giving out food parcels, whatever it is, you know, our pavements are done. You can see that, you know, the elections are coming. You can tell that, you know, the street lights are all of a sudden they're on, the potholes are being filled. We didn't see a lot of that happening. And I think it's all got to do with just the pandemic. We don't have the money, just even as the government, to do other projects, because we had to divert all the funds towards securing the vaccines for the country. So definitely, I would say that the pandemic has had a serious, serious impact on the local government elections.
Zimasa, on the side of the legal challenges, you know, have we seen anything like this before? You know, even before the voting happens, for there to be so much contestation legally.
I believe it's unprecedented, Bramaik, and I think the fear to a whole lot of us, you know, peace-loving South Africans, has been the Electoral Commission's independence and the opposition parties, their perspective of what they believe happened. But yeah, so far the contestation started in court, and you know, they are spilling onto the streets now. So yeah, we look forward to the campaigns.
Amanda, just to round off the COVID element, you know, how would you say it has changed the way that campaigning is going to happen for these elections? I've seen a few billboards, but not many.
Yes, I think it's very difficult, you know, and if you don't have the history of the ANC and the other political parties that we've seen, it's going to be very difficult for the smaller parties to, you know, canvass for votes. We saw a very interesting dynamic that happened last week, just connected to the vaccines, is that the ANC started using, its platforms as the governing party, to do campaigning for the local government elections while they were doing the vaccination drives. So last week we had the deputy president out in Rustenburg, you know, asking people about the vaccines, answering questions, demystifying, you know, myths and lies and fake news. And then all of a sudden, before he left, he was like, remember, he told the gathering that to remember that, we've got the voter registration coming up. Don't forget to go and register. He'll come back and tell them who to vote for. So we saw something like that. And the political analysts that we spoke to were criticizing this action, saying that they were abusing government resources. And we know why the ANC is obviously doing this. It's because they don't have money for a fancy local government elections campaign. We had the EFF going out, and we've seen the DA going out, but the impact is not as what we've seen in the past. The numbers of the people turning out to the rallies or the gatherings has been really, really small. And this has been because of the pandemic.
Mm. So you reckon that this might impact the level of voter participation as well as Zimasa?
It should, because, you know, firstly, we already have such a high number of people, especially among the youth, who have no interest in taking part in elections. And then we have the elderly who, you know, live with comorbidities, have been conditioned to understand that you stay at home, you don't leave, you know, the gate, you don't go anywhere. So maybe that's going to play a role as well. But also the political campaigning, it's dull, Bramaik. There is nothing that I have seen that has been interesting yet. Maybe after they've launched their manifestos, they will start. But what I have observed is what Amanda alluded to, that ANC deployees in government, when they go and do an activation at a taxi rank for, you know, COVID vaccinations, they will go there as an MEC, you know, or as a premier, but then they also go there as a PEC member of the ANC, you know, undercover, and maybe as a chairperson of the ANC. So it's what they do, you know. When you look at colors of the posters that they do, it's green, black and yellow. So I don't know, maybe that's gonna work in their favor. But where I live, I've only seen one poster. It's a DA poster. So yeah, that's how I'm gonna gauge in my area who wants me to vote for them. So I've only seen one.
Okay. Yeah, that's very unprecedented. One poster. Yeah. Guys, I think that that's all the time we have for the Sunday Times Politics Weekly for this week. And I'd like to thank all three of my guests for this week's conversation: political violence monitor Meredith Haas and Sunday Times political correspondents Amanda Khoza, as well as Zimasa Matiwane. And by the way, you can find a podcast of this conversation on iona.fm, on Spotify, on Google Podcast, on Apple Podcast, or wherever you prefer to source your podcasts. Until next time, we still say stay safe, sanitize, wear a mask, and avoid crowded places, even if you're going to vote. I'm Mike Siluma, signing off.